Buccaneers fans, preseason game two is in the books. This is the Ira Kaufman podcast. I don't even know if that was really a game. I'm not really quite sure what I watched, but I do know we're going to talk about it. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan is here. The man who's not here, Lee, and I'm going to explain this, is Ira Kaufman, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. Ira is fine. He's healthy, to the best of our knowledge. But, Lee, we were going to record episode two of this podcast on Saturday, kind of wrap up an interesting week of practice, and then finish up the podcast after the game or maybe after a few quarters and get it out there. But we find out, Lee, that Ira was not planning to watch the game live. So this was a bit of a curveball. So we said, you know what, the hell with it. We're just going to talk about the game right after the game. And then we'll come back on Monday with another podcast, and Ira can fill in the blanks, tell some stories from last week, and we know there's going to be some interesting things happening on Monday that we can talk about. But it's all presented by Bill Curry Ford. They don't take a night off from watching the Bucks like Ira. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, right there on Dale Mabry Highway, a mile north of the stadium. GM Sean Sullivan is fired up. He's ready to help Bucks fans like he always does with personal service. Ask him questions, email him, call him. Email is right there on the website, BillCurryFord.com, and he's going to give you a personal service. We're all Bill Curry customers. You should be too, because they are 61 years serving Tampa. They are just the standard when it comes to service from a car dealership, Bill Curry Ford. Lee, this game today, the Bucks played horrible football. The backups look like less than backups. And, of course, we're not concerned because we've been around too long to be worried about a team that just won the Super Bowl in its second preseason game. But what stood out for you? Give me two things, Lee, that caught your eye. I'll give you a couple as well.
Well, the obvious is O.G. Howard. You know, he's obviously not 100%. I mean, Arians has said that recently. But, I mean, when's the last time O.G. Howard caught a contested pass? You know, I hate to crap on O.J. Howard. I like the guy. He's got talent. But I can't fully blame this on his Achilles. You know, like his Achilles has nothing to do with his hands. And he dropped some gimme passes that should have been caught. That thing at, off his helmet, I had flashbacks when he tried to be Magic Johnson on the 2-yard line and it turned into a pick. And then everybody and their brother was screaming about Jameis and his picks. Well, first off, O.G. Howard, I think, secured Cam Brate's spot on the roster. If anybody thought Cam Brate was on the bubble, I think after tonight, he's secure. Tanner Hudson, dude, you had a chance to secure your spot on the roster. O.G. Howard is looking like he's looking terrible. And then you go out there and you yak a couple get passes. I mean, dude, come on. The big things to me outside O.J. Howard was, to wrap it up in one element, guys that had chances to, if not secure the roster, put themselves on the doorstep of securing the roster, played like crap.
Yeah, I got to agree with you, except I will say this. If O.J. Howard, while his Achilles is not connected to his fingertips, if he's thinking about it too much, if he doesn't feel comfortable running, that all goes to his concentration, and that can take away from his hands. I'll go back. You know, he had those two drops, and then he caught a couple of balls. One was good yak, but I think it was the third one after the second drop. So, like, his fifth target, Bradley McDougal broke up the pass, but it was a high throw. He got his hands on it, and there was just, like, no explosion from Howard to the ball. Like, he was there. He got his hands on it. McDougal made a decent play, but there was no, like, ferocious burst to the ball, the kind of first-round talent in O.J. Howard going for that ball, and that's got to be partially the injury. We just don't know how healthy he is, but I think I'm going to make a call here, Lee, and say he's not healthy, and it's going to take time for him at this point, and that's okay. If he's not good till after the bye week, if he's just not, you know, not all there till after the bye, but after the bye, week 9, he can get there. Great.
People, well, myself included, we have to remember that O.J. Howard, when training camp started, he was on floppy hat patrol. He didn't get on the field till like, you know, the second week. That's when he got on the field. Obviously, he didn't practice during underwear football season. So he's really been on the shelf when it comes to football shape. Been on the shelf for 10 months, maybe. So we have to factor that in. That is a factor. But, man, he's not doing himself any favors. I'll tell you a guy who has been regressing in practice a little bit, and he certainly regressed tonight. He looked like a practice squad guy, was Jalen Darden.
Yeah, I mean, I just have not been impressed with Darden. And again, there's a very high bar on this Bucs receiving core. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Tyler Johnson as a number five receiver, and he may be the best number five receiver in the game. And, you know, Scotty Miller's out there even playing with the scrubs tonight. And Miller averaged 20 yards a catch last year and made several clutch catches. And he's out there because that's how deep the Bucs are. You know, so Darden's being compared to these guys, and he's just not at that level. And he did have an early drop of Gabbard throw, and he just doesn't look like he's ready, which is okay. Fourth-round pick out of North Texas. But I don't know if he's the best returner, and it's going to be very interesting to see if the Bucs go with the better guy, who I think is Jaden Mickens, or they go with Darden early. That fumble, Lee, on the return, he had a fumble, and he recovered it himself. But that's going to put up a red flag at one Buck that he's going to have to get out of their heads next week.
He had a play where he came back to the ball. If he didn't continue going backwards to try to make a big turn around a couple of defenders, if he just stood his ground where he caught the ball, he had a first down. I still think in the back of his mind, he thinks he's playing at North Texas. Well, these dudes that are he's going up against, a little bit higher competition. You know, in North Texas, that move he had, and if you go back and look at his highlight tapes, he did that a lot at North Texas. It sort of reminded me of Peter Warrick. When Peter Warrick was drafted by the Bengals, he was trying all these moves on bubble screens that worked so well against Wake Forest and Georgia Tech, but he wasn't playing Wake Forest or Georgia Tech any longer. Those linebackers are just as quick as the cornerbacks in the ACC, and he got burned by that. So I think that's part of, I don't know if you're going to call it a problem, but I think Darden is starting to realize this is a different level of player here than a little bit different competition, and the moves that worked for him in college aren't going to work for him in the NFL.
Yeah, there was that moment where he sort of lost track of the sticks. He had the first down, then he went backwards, and Arians went looking for him. It was a rough night for Arians. You know, no coach likes to get blown out like that, and the tackling was terrible, and there just really wasn't, like Arians even said on his special teams, on his kick returns, he said, we're just not blocking. I mean, literally, the Bucs continue to catch kick returns, and outside of one last week, everyone is coming up before the 20-yard line, which is hard to do. They're not covering kicks too well, and the special teams, that's a little bit alarming because a lot of the guys who are playing special teams are the real special teamers in the regular season. So hopefully that gets tightened up next week. I wanted to mention two moments, Lee, that were kind of funny from tonight. Almost bizarre, but I want to mention first that Big Storm beer. That's the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. It is Florida's best craft beer. It is Florida, as we like to say, the Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA. Everybody loves it. Sunny Key Lime, my new favorite. You've got the Wavemaker Amber Ale. You've got Tropic Pressure Golden Ale. You've got so many classics. Get to BigStormBrewery.com. BigStormBrewery.com. That's where you can find out where to buy the beer. And they've got their beautiful tap rooms. Remember, Ira Kaufman himself will be watching Bucs road games all season long, again, at the Clearwater Big Storm Brewery Tap Room, 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road. 3,000-plus square feet of outdoor, beautiful covered seating, fully covered. Great views, modern. And then there's the indoor tap room there as well. Amazing food, BigStormBrewery.com. So, Lee, NFL Game Pass, that's where I was watching the game. And on NFL Game Pass, I probably shouldn't have revealed this because now it's going to get fixed. But on NFL Game Pass, when they go to commercial, they keep the feed going, and there is no commercials on NFL Game Pass. You don't see a local you know, a restaurant commercial or something on NFL Game Pass. So a lot of times, Rondé Barber and Chris Myers and Dan Lucas, they have the mics open and they're just chatting during the break. And so I'm always listening to hear what they're chatting about. Now, sometimes it gives me a little insight, but today I decided to write about one of the things. And early in the game, Chris Myers, they go to commercial and Chris Myers, you know, is talking on the hot mic. He knows it's not on the air, but maybe he doesn't realize that it's flowing on the NFL Game Pass feed. And he says, gosh, they can't run the ball. You know, a lot of this problem is they're just doing nothing in the run game. Same thing last week. And Rondé Barber basically replies, they couldn't run the ball last year. And he points out that they were 28th in rushing. And I'll add that the Bucs were 25th in yards per carry last year during the regular season. I think they were 29th in attempts. They just weren't very good running the ball. But you don't hear that brought up very often because of the season that Ronald Jones had. But overall, they weren't very good until they got to the playoffs. And it's sort of the unspoken thing. It got me thinking, Lee, because the Bucs, if they continue to run the ball the way they did in the playoffs with playoff Lenny, then literally the offense would be unstoppable if they kept that type of running game going. And, you know, we focus on the weapons and all the opportunities the Bucs have to throw the football, and that's where their strength is. But, you know, hearing Barber mention that and thinking about the playoff run and looking at how successful they were running the ball in the playoffs against the best of the best defenses in a lot of cases, you know, that running game is key in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's not the greatest, but if you read Warren Sharp's stuff, this is a pet peeve of Warren Sharp. He goes on and on and on about this, almost to the point where I can understand why some fans get hacked off of me because I always want sacks. I'm starting to understand because Warren Sharp, though he's correct on this, he's like a bulldog. He won't let up. He says the Bucs almost always run on first downs, and the teams know it. They run inside on first downs. It is as if Leftwich is hollering across the field, "We're running up Ellie Marpet's ass," and sure enough, they do. And teams know it, and they stop them. And so that contributes a lot to, if you want to call it, subpar running. That's a big contributor. And like I said, Warren Sharp, for those who don't know, he's a big-time handicapper. Now he's into football analytics. He puts out previews and guides. And he's one of these hardcore stat geeks. He is just, that's an absolute pet peeve. And he beats the drum almost every week about running on first down. And he said when the Bucs quit doing that after the Chiefs regular season game, they blew up. Now they resumed that in the playoffs running on first down. But at least this time they were blowing up holes. They were getting yardage, so it was all better. And that's one reason why the Bucs had a subpar running game, because they ran so often on first downs. Defenses knew it, and defenses stopped them.
They are a little predictable at times with that. Part of that is by design. I mean, they did the same thing with Peyton Barber the previous year.
Yeah.
And that's kind of Arians' offense. And sure, it helps set up play action, but they are a little too predictable with that, especially when you think about how when Leonard Fournette came to the Bucs, as an example, you know, he talked about, gosh, I'm not going to be running into eight-man boxes anymore. And, you know, with this, all these weapons, there's going to be better looks and better angles and all this stuff, and it didn't necessarily play out for him. Part of that might have been Lenny himself, the way he was running in the regular season, but my only point is that if they can continue what they did in the postseason, they'll be able to do anything and everything at will. And remember, they averaged 30 points through those postseason games, all four of them, which is still incredibly stunning.
Now, here's one for you, and a lot of people get mad at me because I am yet to be won over by Byron Leftwich. I'm just not. Just, you know, we don't know who's running offense. Arians claims Leftwich, but we've never heard Brady say that. And to my knowledge, we've never heard other players say that. I think Arians is trying to prop up Leftwich for a job, or at least a job interview. And here's one for you. I thought of this today. When is the last time a team won a Super Bowl, averaged 30 points every game, including the playoffs, including the Super Bowl, averaged 30 points a game, and the offensive coordinator did not get one interview? I don't ever remember that happening.
Well, there's three variables here. I don't really think Arians is propping up Leftwich. It's just a question of most people believe it's Arians' offense, and it is his offense. So Leftwich is executing it, and when it's not your offense, it sort of takes away the luster from whatever Leftwich is doing. But as far as the interviews, I don't know if Leftwich is really interested in any interviews. It's a really good question because he hasn't behaved like somebody who is seeking the limelight, and that's what the head coach position in the NFL is. I don't care where you're coaching. You need to embrace that limelight because it's a big part of your job in dealing with interviews and all that stuff. So Leftwich just hasn't done anything that makes you think he really wants to be a head coach quite yet. He may have turned down an interview or two, and you know, sometimes with being in the Super Bowl run, that might have stopped him from going on an interview or two that he was interested in because he was busy and he knew he wasn't going to be the head guy. He knew he wasn't.
Did it stop Bowles?
No, it didn't stop Bowles at all. But I can't speak for Leftwich, and Bowles has got like 18 years. He's like 18 years older than Leftwich. So
that's true.
You know, I don't really know. I can't say if he was offered a couple interviews and said, hey, you know what? They're just going to Rooney Rule me. I'm never going to get that job, and I don't want to take away waste my time. You know, I don't know. But it is a bit of a mystery on that front. And I still think even this offseason, Leftwich hasn't taken any opportunity to sell himself with national interviews, that he knows that, you know, owners are pay attention to those media outlets on the national scale. He just hasn't
like
wanted to do
Kerwin
it.
Like Pat Kerwin or Peter King or Albert Breer. Yeah.
You name it. Anybody would sit down with the Super Bowl offensive coordinator. It's a little weirdly, and I haven't gotten a straight answer yet. I've been looking for it. The Buccaneers, there has been no training camp tour stop on Sirius XM NFL radio.
Here's what's going on. I'm bittersweet that you brought that up. Pat Kerwin and Jim Miller were scheduled to be there August 11th.
Right.
What, two Wednesdays ago? They had four flights canceled to Tampa. Okay, that happens. Here's what bothers me. Someone that deals with electronic media at the Bucs front office, he told me that since they couldn't make it out here, they weren't going to do one. They being Sirius NFL Radio. And that's a borderline outrage. Super Bowl champion, and you have guys at your station who live in Florida, 2 hours distance. I'm not going to name names. One guy lives in Naples. Another guy lives in Gainesville. That's a regular host. Both of these guys are regular co-hosts. And you don't send them up to Tampa, like, help drive a couple hours down or up the interstate, whichever you prefer, and go do some interviews, and we got to put a show together for the Super Bowl champions, the Bucks. That is really weak. That's pissing on your listeners. You're telling me more people want to listen to how the Houston Texans are building a three-win team than the Super Bowl champs are building a team to defend their championship? To win another championship with all these Pro Bowlers, Brady, et cetera, on down the line? Are you telling me more listeners would rather listen about the Denver Broncos? More people want to listen to the Broncos talk than the Super Bowl champions with Tom Brady? Are you shitting me? Come on. I could sort of understand if it was the Seahawks and you couldn't get out there because of a plane, and the nearest guy you have on your dime living in Seattle lives up in Missouri somewhere. Okay, I get it. But you got two full-time co-hosts on your dime, on your station, that live within a two-hour drive, and you can't get someone to the Bucks to do a previous show? I love the guys at Sirius NFL Radio. We have friends there. I think the world of them. But this is, to quote Bruce Arians tonight, this is shit in the bed.
Yeah, I don't even think it has anything to do with the other teams that you were talking about. There's plenty of.
I think it has everything to do with the team. If you got a schedule conflict, who are you going to fly out? I mean, okay, you're putting this together.
No, I don't
fly guys out to Denver over the Super Bowl champions or Houston. Come on.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the conflict. They can record a show and record interviews and air them anytime they want. It doesn't have to be.
Oh yeah, the Bucks would welcome these guys. They'd do it over the phone. Sure.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that. I agree with you that they have plenty of talent that they could have brought to $1. They could have even hired other people that they've used in past years.
Booger.
You know, I'm sure Derek Brooks would have been happy to fill in for a day.
Sure.
He used to be on NFL radio, and they could have, if they had a date scheduling conflict, they could have just split it up a little bit or move some things around because everything's pre-recorded anyway. So anyway, for those who don't know what we're talking about, like I was saying, SiriusXM NFL radio did not come out to do their annual training camp tour stop and four-hour show on the Bucks this year, which is kind of strange, especially since they have talent nearby, but there's plenty of other talent that they could have used. Heck, Mark Dominic lives in Nashville, and he's been doing a few of these training camp stops. I'm sure if they said, hey, Mark, can you drive down to Tampa for the day, he would have been happy to do it and see all his old buddies. So very strange, but it sort of fits with the Buccaneers keeping a lower profile in the media this offseason. I'm sure Arians was not crying about it. Lee, do you make anything out of the, speaking about that running game, about the offensive line and them being unable to really run the ball this preseason at all? I mean, we're not seeing anybody shining with any big breakout stuff. Tonight was a mess, and you know they wanted to at least, you know, keep Kyle Trask out of third and nine every time he touches the ball. Would you make anything out of that, or it's just, hey, it's just backup nonsense that doesn't matter?
It's backup nonsense. If I have to whine about the offensive line at all, it would be when the starters last week, when they gave up that cheap sack on Brady. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Come on. The very first time you guys go at bat, I know it's a preseason game, but the very first time you guys take the field, you give up a sack to your 44-year-old quarterback and he goes down and you guys wrestle well? Seriously? The first time? Come on. I can't get too worked up about second and third stringers weren't blowing holes open. Maybe if Aaron Stinney had a subpar night, okay, but I didn't really study it that closely. But the last week, that disturbed me more than anything.
Yeah, we talked about that one. Joe Tryon looks very good, very talented. You see the talent at all times on his pass rush. You know, he's got a lot of moves, but yet maybe he's not picking them and pulling them out of the hat at the right time, but he'll figure that out. For a lot of this night, he was going against a 7-year veteran on the Titans. I forgot the guy's name right now. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, he's got like 20 career starts and has been around a while. So at least he had some decent competition, but Tryon wasn't really moving that guy around. When they took him out, then you saw that streak there of Tryon had like 4 or 5 strong pass rushes in a row. You could see the kind of impact he can make. Although I put it on Twitter, people didn't like it. Anybody paying attention caught Tryon loafing in the running game. You know, you got to be all out at all times, especially you know, if you want to win the snaps for this coaching staff. They're going to see, hey, why are you not pursuing the ball like a madman? You got Vita Vea running down Ronald Jones in practice, and Sue and Vea running down guys from behind in games. You know, hey, you're Joe Tryon. It's the second quarter of a preseason game. Don't get caught loafing in the run game. But the talent is there on the offense, on the pass rush, and you could tell he loves it. You could tell he's hungry. You know, I'm excited. I can't wait to see him in the regular season.
Yeah, the word I chose to use in a story wasn't loafing. To me, loafing, that insinuates that you don't give a damn, that you're just out there collecting a check, or as Ian Beckles and Bruce Arians would say, you're brother-in-lawing it. You know, to me, the term loafing implies something really dark.
Yeah,
you have no heart.
I agree with you, Lee, but a football play is 5 seconds. If you can't play to the whistle, you're loafing. It doesn't matter what is in your head, you're just loafing.
I called it effort. I don't know if we're talking about the same plays, but two different times I saw in running plays, they were running plays on the inside. Tryon wasn't that far away, and with his speed, he can make up a lot of ground. You could tell he wasn't giving effort. It was like, okay, they got 5 yards past me, I don't have a prayer. No. You keep going. If that guy breaks a tackle, or if one of your teammates falls down on the tackle, you got a chance to make a play. You got a chance to maybe save the play. Hello, Bradley Pinion. He busted his tail on that kickoff, saved the touchdown. If there was no flag, he saved the touchdown. That's what I'm referring to as effort. Bust your tail. To me, loafing is a very, very dark, charged word. Who was that slob the Bucks got? He played with the Redskins and the Titans. He was defensive tackle. Dominic signed him out of desperation.
Haynesworth.
That is loafing. I know what you're saying, and technically they mean the same thing, loafing and effort. Effort means, you know, just give it a little bit more, just a little bit more. And with trying on speed, who knows what how many tackles you could have. But there was like two plays I saw. He's going to get called out in the film room.
I'm sure even a couple of his teammates are going to chirp in saying, hey, you know, they'll put the peer pressure on him. And I have no doubt it'll be worked out. I thought it was funny, Lee. I don't know if you heard. Did you hear Levante David's chat with Ronde Barber?
I did not.
Okay, Lee, before I lay out what David said, I want to give some numbers. 727-807-1005. 727-807-1005. That's the phone number of Florida's Elite Restoration. Your first phone call whenever you have a problem in your home, a disaster, a flood, you find a bunch of water, all of a sudden you realize your dishwasher's been leaking for days, or you find mold, or you have an electrical fire and you've got an issue. Before you call your insurance company, call Florida's Elite Restoration so you have somebody you can trust in your corner for this disaster. Maybe it's navigating the insurance process. Maybe they can fix it and save you a lot of money in the process and not have a claim against your record. But regardless, Florida's Elite Restoration, they are there for you for a free assessment of what's happening in your home. And that's when you need it. When there's a problem, you need a free voice that you can trust. They are a small company, but they're not too small to cover the entire Tampa Bay area, family owned. Ira loves them. We're great friends of Florida's Elite Restoration. Get to floridaseliterestoration.com immediately so you can bookmark it and you can get familiar with their services so you're ready when you have some sort of devastating loss. You have someone to call that you can trust. floridaseliterestoration.com.
Well, Levante David, he's chatting with Barber, and somehow, some way, I don't know how this possibly happened, but somehow Levante David was ranting about how the team still has doubters and that he hears people doubting the Bucs all the time, and it's under his skin, and he hears people saying, oh, it was a COVID season, and yeah, you know, that somehow that discounts the Super Bowl win. Now, the reason I say this is ridiculous is because I don't know anybody anywhere living outside of a sports bar in New Orleans where they doubt the Bucs. Everybody's on board with the Bucs. The odds makers have them to win the NFC. Everybody and their brothers praising Jason Light for bringing back all the starters. The team's on an 8-game winning streak. They're loaded. Everybody is all on board with the Bucs everywhere. Yet somehow Levante David's got a chip on his shoulder and says people doubt us. I think it's great. I hope he tells Devin White and they start screaming and wanting to rip people's heads off. I think it's just comical as hell that David thinks the Bucs have doubters. Where are they?
Well, I agree with you. Now, the Chiefs, the way the Chiefs have been chirping all year, or all offseason, I should say, the Chiefs are like, well, it was an accident what happened in the Super Bowl. Yeah, real accident. A streaker crossed the goal line more than you guys. That's a real accident. You see them chirp. You read them chirping. You know, Kelsey once in a while, Mahomes will pop off. Like, you know, the Bucs didn't play, beat us, we beat ourselves, that kind of nonsense. But what I find is fascinating, the mentality of NFL players. Quan Alexander, when he was with the Bucs, that son of a gun, he would go through Twitter at night looking for anything remotely, not even negative about the Bucs, but maybe there's a cloud of doubt about something. And back when Quan played, there was more than a cloud of doubt. But he would take anything and twist it as if they said, you've got no stones in your pants, you're a lousy player, you're gutless, you name it. He would twist everything, and the guy would just go into a rage on Twitter. Oh, I can't wait to take the field and show these people, blah, blah, blah. If you got to hunt for things on Twitter that aren't even there to self-motivate yourself, knock yourself out if you're getting the results. And it almost sounds like that's what Levante David's doing, that he's searching for stuff that doesn't really exist, but he pretends it does exist, so it motivates him. And, hey, if that makes you go out and get 130 tackles, knock yourself out, Levante, and make sure Devin White reads this stuff too.
Yeah, I agree with you completely there, Lee, completely. Remember, Sage drives a Cherry Red Ford Escape 2020, full luxury line from Bill Curry Ford. He loves that thing. He adores it. He's probably out now in Ybor dancing with his wife, and they're about to get back into their beautiful cherry red Ford Escape. I know Ira's been taking that thing out on the town. If you see him around town, honk at him. Honk at the Sage. He lives up in Newport Richey. BillCurryFord.com. That's where you can shop for one yourself. Lee, I got to bring this up because it was such a unique choice of words between this story on JoeBucksFan.com and the one you wrote about Dak Prescott maybe not playing the whole season. I think they're going to combine for about 100,000 views from what I've seen trending so far. But Tom Brady is doing this show on Sirius this year with Jim Gray. And we read about that it was coming. First show, I think, September 6th. However, out of the blue, they dropped the training camp edition. So Brady was on for half an hour chit-chatting him with Jim Gray. And so Jim Gray asked him about fights. He asked him about fights at $1. Hey, a crazy time against the Titans. And Tom Brady proceeds to talk about the fights and how things get heated. And, you know, Bruce Arians says it's 30 guys, 30 dogs going after 15 bones. And Brady seemed to like it. He's like, yeah, I like when Coach says that. Anyway, so Jim Gray asked him about Antonio Brown throwing a good left hook. And Tom Brady says, yeah, I asked AB what happened. And he said, quote, man, I lost it. I lost it. I just blacked out. I think I blacked out over there. And the thought of Antonio Brown going into a rage and blacking out and throwing wild fists, I mean, it makes you wonder what might happen this season. Or it sort of gives you some insight into what happens to this guy when he gets angry off the field and there's a bicycle nearby or a furniture mover or, you know, God forbid, a woman nearby. I thought that was just so telling that Tom Brady's sitting there on national radio saying that Antonio Brown said he blacked out and started throwing punches. I don't even know what to think. It's just too funny.
That whole incident, it happened right in front of me. First off, when Brown and Chris Jackson were getting into it, the actual fight, we all saw the picture of the guy for the Tennessean, I mean, Antonio Brown landing a left right on Chris Jackson's mouth. I mean, perfect picture. Well, those guys, did you ever see a video of Deion Sanders and Jerry Rice getting into a fight in a game?
No.
Oh, man. I mean, it was like Hagler-Hearns. They were just wailing on each other. That's what this was like. For about 10 seconds there, these guys are absolutely just wailing on each other, just wild roundhouse. It was beautiful. But what set that up was, and this literally happened in front of me, and this is a combination of things. Things happen so quick. We don't have access to video. We can't hit the DVR button rewind. So it's like boom, boom, boom. There was this cornerback that was covered Antonio Brown. The Titans screwed up reporters, and so did the Bucks. You have players with the same number. And you look at the roster, you look at the number. Oh, it's this guy. Well, how can it be that guy? He's a running back. Well, there's a freaking defensive back with the same number. And some scrub defensive back. I'm not even positive that was him, although my notes said 25. And J.P. Peterson had the same thing. You know, we all kind of conferred. There was it was a bunch of reporters there from both towns. And on that play in question, they were coming down the left sideline. This guy was guarding Antonio Brown. Dude had a handful of Antonio Brown's jersey. I mean, it was so obvious. He pulled his jersey. It looked like it was 3 yards between Antonio Brown and the end of his jersey. I mean, it was like one of these tearaway jerseys, only it wasn't, you know. And so after the play, the cornerback is coming toward me. I was underneath the goalpost, and he was coming toward me, and the referee kind of told him, man, that was so holding. And the guy blew up on the referee. Oh, he was holding me the whole time. He was holding me all the way down the line. He put his hand in my face. He was going nuts. And I guess he must have said something on the way back. He said something to Antonio Brown, and Chris Jackson jumped in. Next thing you know, it's a brawl between Jackson and Brown. It's like a street fight. It was beautiful. And there were so many fights there Thursday. That was the best practice I've seen in a long time. Every time you looked up, somebody was getting in a fight. And what I think happened was Arians chewed their rear ends out the day before. He thought Tennessee was a little more physical than them. And if you notice, in the days leading up to the practice, even after practice, Arians was, his focus was physical practice. Well, him and his assistants chewed the Bucks out after Wednesday's practice. He thought the Titans got the best of them. So I think the Bucks are actually looking for fights the next day. Because every other time you look up, there was a fight. There was someone wrestling or someone grabbing. It was awesome. And, if Brown blacks out like that, holy smokes. You love to see the fire in a guy like that, but you're almost scared if he's blacking out. Because he gets in a fight like that, he's out for a game, maybe two games. Who knows?
Yeah, and I think the key term you used there was that the Bucks may have been looking for the fights because Arians said that the team was lethargic on Wednesday, and that's kind of scary if you think about for how long they were looking forward to facing the Titans at their own practice facility, big physical team, fresh faces to smack around, and then they came out flat. You know, and they were all juiced up for Thursday, and it showed. And I think Arians actually liked it, even though he wouldn't admit it.
He said there were no fights, and he said Antonio Brown was waving at flies.
Yeah. For the record, so nobody's confused here, Jerry Jones did say tonight that Dak Prescott is ready to play opening day, that if they were lining up against Tampa tonight, was his quote, he'd be starting, we'd feel great about it. And so Jerry Jones himself has now put his foot down and said Prescott's ready to play. He's been throwing. So the mystery continues. We'll see if the line moves. But one thing I'm certain of is that the line is not going to move because the Bucks got completely blown out in preseason. And next Saturday's game is in Houston. Lovie Smith's defense. The Texans are a mess. The Bucks are going to play the starters for the first half. There are no excuses. They should put out a good effort there, Lee. I'm hoping that they can somehow win that first half 17-6 or something like that, get a ton of confidence going into their home opener and put all this preseason nonsense and the hot and cold play and training camp behind them. And I think they're actually going to do that. So I'm fired up. We're fired up. We're going to get the Sage back on Monday, and we're going to go over a lot of stuff. And we'll be keeping the roll going. So, Lee, I'm going to let you go. Maybe get a nightcap beer here entering into your Sunday. Of course, a Big Storm beer. And a reminder, as we heard before, if you have any issue in your home, you're home this weekend, it's one of your final quiet Sundays, you're cleaning up, you find mold, you immediately call Florida's Elite Restoration. If you have any issue in your house at any time, call them first. Florida's Elite Restoration. Lee, we'll see if we get a unique cut or two in the next few days. The Bucks do have to cut down. They could actually do that tomorrow after they grade the film. I don't think anything's going to stand out too much.
Yeah, it's almost scary. You know, the Bucks had that draft for build up special teams. So far, it's not looking promising.
You know what? It's looking so bad. It got me thinking tonight. You know what? Maybe they do something crazy and trade somebody for some special teams talent. I mean, you don't normally do something like that, but if Arians thinks that that's just a big gaping hole, that, gosh, we can't be letting up 25-yard returns every game, that's going to bite us in the ass, maybe they do look for somebody, somebody to trade a special teams ace for. I don't know what they would do, but that's got to get fixed in a hurry. And the crazy thing is the special teams coordinator, you know, he hasn't fixed this yet, and this is Arians' hand-picked guy. They might want to look at the coach a little bit, too, and get somebody to analyze what's going on here.
Well, here's the bright spot about all that, and I don't disagree with what you're saying. Outside of suck-up and opinion, Bucks were lousy on special teams last year. They won the Super Bowl. Now, you don't want to, like, special teams, we don't have to worry about it. We won the Super Bowl. They can stink again this year. We can still win it again. You know, you don't want to do that. But, hey, in recent history, like in less than a year, the Bucks have proven they can win it all if their special teams is lousy.
Yeah, and that's the fun about all the stuff we talked about tonight. Anything that was negative, it all gets a big giant asterisk, and you say to yourself, and when you want to be peaceful and calm, you say, you know what? The Bucks had the same kind of thing going on last year. They won the Super Bowl. O.J. Howard can drop all he wants in the summer. We didn't even need him to win a Super Bowl. And, of course, you always want to play well. But, they won it without great special teams last year, and they could do it again. So, Lee, we will see you and Ira next week. I can't wait to needle the Sage, find out when he watched the game, maybe Sunday night. I could see him sitting back with some chips and his ancient magazines and newspapers that he reads, and and studying the Buccaneers game, and we'll talk about it on Monday.
All right, man. Thanks.